There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. And remember, check us out online as well, fmtalk1065.com, where I'm watching the online opinion poll question brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So at the and I still have not figured out exactly why the random time of 3 a.m. That's when Mississippi went live with their Powerball and Mega Millions. Now, they've had the scratch-off lottery since last year, at the end of last year. Now, they're now in the Powerball and Mega Millions circuit, I guess you would call it. And if we ask this question, will you play the Powerball or Mega Millions in Mississippi now that Mega Millions jackpot games are legal? 100% of y'all say yes. Now what? 100% of y'all saying yes as they debate lotto, maybe, in this upcoming session. 100% of y'all saying you're going to drive to Mississippi and buy some Mega Millions and Powerball tickets. That's if you haven't voted yet, make sure to vote online, front page of fmtalk1065.com. Maybe that'll be the subject of tomorrow's email from my buddy Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Todd, you could lead with people in Mobile and Baldwin counties 100% buying lottery tickets in Mississippi.
That's pretty significant. I'm wondering, as the day goes forward, is anybody going to say?
We lose Todd. Lost Todd. It was going great. It was going great. It was fantastic. We got started here on a Thursday with the show. Everything was going good. I was watching the monitor there as the senators were questioning the legal teams. I had all the stories up, and Todd dropped off, but he's back now.
Sorry.
Now
I'm back. I'm sorry about that.
All right, no worries. So,
I was not attacked by the governor's dog.
I was waiting. We're going to talk about the plant, the inside sleeper cell of, I think, Missy. And Missy, isn't that the name of the dog? Missy.
Yeah.
Missy. Yeah, and her attack on Governor Ivey. I will get to that in a little bit. But yeah, so maybe this is just it. We'll see what happens with this polling throughout the day. My very unscientific and for amusement purposes only online opinion poll question. But right now, if you want to talk to people there in Montgomery, just let them know that right now, Mobile Baldwin County, 100% of them are going to buy Mega Millions or Powerball jackpot tickets in Mississippi. Because it went online tonight or this morning at 3 in the morning. For some reason, 3 in the morning. I don't get that. But it's online. So now Mississippi with full lotto and also sports gambling and also Class 3 gaming and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I'm too surprised. It's really popular. And I would imagine, especially right there, I mean, if you can just drive across the state line and get a lotto ticket. Of course, you can drive to Florida, too.
Yeah.
But we're going to be doing some polling next week about this statewide just to see, okay, you know, would the state of Alabama, would the citizens support, you know, a lottery as it's being proposed? I know it's going to be a healthy yes. We don't know exactly how much it will be, but that's important because whatever they pass, if they pass something, it would go to a vote of the people. It would be a constitutional amendment, and it would have to be voted upon by the people. So it matters the percentage of yes versus no on that.
Would there be we looked at what happened in last session when one of the things that derailed this is where the money would go, how much goes to general fund, how much goes to ETF, all those. Would there be a move it would it be clunky if so, where you would have a bill passed that would be the CA, constitutional amendment that would show up on the ballot just to legalize the lottery in the state. And then maybe in the following session or a special session, they could go in and debate where the money would go, or those things. Could you put up something that says, hey, the people, you know, we amend the Constitution of the state of Alabama to allow lottery to be operated by the state and the state to be, you know, whatever the language would be, and then have a special or something where you'd work out the details?
I suppose that's possible, but, you know, Representative Steve Klaus came out this week with his proposal. Actually, he just emailed around a draft, and as opposed to last year, his bill would direct much of the money toward education, pre-K and college scholarships. And you remember we talked a lot about the proposal last year. It directed a lot of money toward prisons, Medicaid, the general fund, mm-hmm. where there's always a shortfall. Many years there's a shortfall, and while that makes a lot of sense budget-wise, because those are where the problems are budget-wise, it's also not very popular. If you go back to almost every state that has instituted a lottery, it's always been about the kids, right? Educating
it's for the
kids,
children,
college scholarships.
Oh yes,
and so that's because that's more popular. And when I saw Mr. Klaus's proposal come out, I thought it was kind of clever, because it's pre-K. Pre-K is like the unicorn of the mm-hmm. state house. It is so popular because it gets results, right? It's been the nation's top program. They'll do anything to fund pre-K because it gets a ton of good press. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Now, could they work up? Like, it happened to some degree in Georgia. People talk about Georgia's education lottery, but if you dig into it, some of what happened is they brought money into the education budget through the lottery and then shifted money that had been allocated to education before to other parts of the government. I mean, is that a bait and switch where you can say, yeah, we're doing it for the kids? That money goes into the ETF, and I don't know how you would get money out of the ETF because of the wall. But I mean, because so people understand, the Education Trust Fund has pretty much all the growth taxes are going into the Education Trust Fund, correct? And the non-growth
right.
tax revenue is what sits in the general fund. The general fund is what's being starved.
Right. And so probably 50 years or so ago, they put that wall up. They said, okay, we're going to wall off education funding so that people can't raid it. And, you know, that was a really popular move because, you know, everybody wanted the education spending to go up. But as the years have gone by, it's things like the prison system, Medicaid, mental health, maybe not the sexiest things in state government, but really important functions that have gone by the wayside, that their funding does not go up nearly as much as education because, like you said, they don't have the growth taxes like sales tax and things like that. And that wall is still very popular. If they tried to tear it down, you would hear a lot of education groups, the teachers union being the first among them, really raise hell about that and not let that happen. But you raise a good point in that, okay, if a new tax is created, essentially, if a new form of revenue is created, you're going to have a lot of people trying to figure out how that can go to their preferred program.
Mm-hmm.
I think what Klaus has done here is interesting because it's certainly going to be a lot more popular with voters, the education part. But when you get into the nitty-gritty in the legislative session, the reality is going to set in, like, well, we don't actually need more money for those
right.
programs. We actually need money for prisons. But I think he is wise to acknowledge that, you know, it's a lot more likely to pass if it's for the kids.
Yeah, but you're right. No, that is absolutely right. It's always, you know, I tell people beware when they hear whatever move here from everything from an ordinance to a CA, anything in between is for the children, because often that is used as some kind of cover. I wish, and maybe you're right, I mean, you have a lot of savvy in this, but I wish somebody would just get up there and say, hey, here's the thing. ETF has got this funding source, that funding source, that funding source. We can't get into it. General fund contains corrections. Corrections is the albatross right now for the state. We need money. Like I pointed out, I would just call it Alabama's prison lottery, but that probably, you're talking about not sexy. And hey, we need this money in the general fund. That's where, because the people people, it is only the people on Goat Hill that are very worried about where the money goes. I talk to folks every day, as you do, Todd, and the people that are fired up about lottery, they're not fired up about lottery because they're saying, oh, it's going to be great because it's going to fund this, that, or the other. They're fired up about lottery because they want to play lottery. They want to play lottery. That's, I mean, yes, there are exceptions, but the bulk of people, their push for lottery is not because they say, hey, lottery is going to be great because it's going to fund this, that, or the other. They say, we want to play lottery in the state.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And you could also see this situation develop. Last year, or actually for two times now, the Senate has passed a lottery bill only to see it die in the House. And so what could happen here is Klaus could introduce this bill, the education lottery, have it pass the House, because it's a lot easier for a House member to vote yes if it's a, you know, for education and all that. And then if it goes to the Senate, they could change it. They could, you know, change it back to general fund, or maybe split it 50-50 or do whatever they want. But the big hurdle will have already been crossed as far as getting House passage. They can pass it out of the Senate fairly easily. It's always been the House that's been the problem. So maybe that's part of it. You know, let's get an education lottery passed. Maybe that's the, maybe that's what it takes to get it through the House. Up in the Senate, you can, you know, that you can change things. So that's also a possibility.
But it doesn't have to be reconciled, that bill? Like if you moved it out of one body as one way, you made what I would say would be a significant change there. Wouldn't you have to go back for reconciliation in the other body?
You do. You would have to do that for final passage. But that vote is a simple majority. And it doesn't take the procedural hurdles that it takes to get it to pass in the first place. So, and Mr. Klaus has not said that he's planning to do that. I'm just sort of thinking out loud that could be a way, to get it done.
All right, we'll talk more about this and at least the prison portion of this with Todd Stacey. We come back from the news break. But Todd, remind people as we go to break here, if they want to get your email in their inbox, how do they do it?
Oh, it's really easy, and now is the perfect time to sign up. But with the session coming up and elections, just go to aldailynews.com, click subscribe at the top, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. It's free, no cost at all.
There we go. Coming right back, more with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, right here on Midday Mobile, 1218.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, right back to it. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Talking with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We got a lot to get in this segment, so let's get right to it. Speaking of lottery, let's transition into the issue with prisons in our state. Your headline, deteriorating power, sewer utilities lead to partial closure of state prison. That one specifically is Holman, which is right up the road from us here in Atmore.
Yeah, Holman Prison, which is pretty well known throughout the state. It's where the death row facility is.
Yellow Mama.
It's probably our highest security prison in terms of, you know, the most violent inmates are housed there. But it's a dilapidated, old, aging facility. And so, they've been talking about how these prisons are falling apart. Well, this week, apparently, there's a maintenance tunnel that has electricity, sewer, water, all these things. And it got so bad, the situation in this tunnel got so bad that they could not send maintenance staff in there. And that led to electricity outages, sewer and water problems. So yeah, they have closed most of the prison. Some of the prison is still operational, but they've closed most of the prison and have moved more than 600 inmates to other facilities. It's a spattering throughout the state of secure facilities where these inmates are going. It's a really big deal. I mean, that is a rarity for the state to shut down almost all of the prison, and not just any prison, but the death row prison, a maximum security prison, to move inmates elsewhere. Of course, this comes right as we're getting into the legislative session when prison reform and all this is going to be a big issue. So the timing is really curious.
Yeah, a couple of that's one thing that came to mind. The other thing that came to mind is maybe we could get the drug cartel that just had their latest tunnel found down on the border. Maybe we could have them come do some tunnel work. They do a better job, it seems. we could have them to work on it. But yeah, the timing of this, is of note. And then also, with transferring all these 600 to other facilities that are themselves probably already over capacity, now it's intensifies it. Now we got an even bigger issue.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll give the Department of Corrections the benefit of the doubt. They called us, you know, the media, really in the middle of the night to announce this was going on. And, you know, part of the legislation that we're going to see today or this week, and as the session gets going, construction of prisons is not one of them. There's not going to be a bill to build prisons. That's being done through the executive branch. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt as far as I don't think it's actually a stunt. But yeah, it comes at a time when it really just demonstrates, you know, in a very real way, what they've been saying for years is that, you know, these prisons are old, they're falling apart, they're unsafe. And here is the biggest one of them all, the maximum security death row prison, is so bad that they can't even house the inmates there.
Okay. And because one of the, I mean, there's so many nuances to this discussion, and we'll have to do it in further shows. But the short of it is, at least on the construction part, was that it's not the brick and mortar and the bars that cost so much. It's the staffing, right? So, I mean, a new facility would get rid of this dilapidated facility, but could be run with fewer DOC corrections officers.
That's right. I mean, you've got prisons that were built in the 40s and 50s, you know, and they can, you know, do some renovations and add on top of them and things like that. But you still got a basic facility that's 60 years old. So part of it is a newer, modern facility with new technology would be able to house prisoners more securely and more effectively, and perhaps without as many staff. If you don't have a very up-to-date security system, then you need a ton of officers. But if you have, you know, at least in theory, if you have an updated facility with all kinds of modern technology, yeah, you could save some money probably on staff. And that's the toughest hire. You know, we can't seem to hire enough corrections officers, and I get it. It's a terrible job. You know, you can't possibly pay these guys enough to put themselves into harm's way, go into a prison. You hear all the time about, you know, attacks and things like that. So it's a broad problem, but it's kind of come into specific relief here with the closure of the death row prison.
Yeah, some people have said that the only because the prisoners let it happen are they, you know, housed in the facilities here. In other words, there's enough of them that at any point they could probably overthrow the corrections officers.
I hope that's not true. But one thing I think you will see in the legislative session is some kind of, you know, bump in pay, maybe different pay schedules to figure out how to hire more corrections officers. No matter what we do moving forward, we've got to hire more staff in the prisons, not just corrections officers, but mental health professionals, things like that. And that's probably the hardest thing to do. So I'm interested to see what they propose, what the governor proposes to actually try to fix that problem.
All right, before we run out of time, got a minute left here, but the people need to know that there's been an accident at the Blunt Mansion.
Oh, well, I think it's the regular mansion, at the governor's mansion. Yeah, Governor Ivey this week fell. She tripped over her dog. You remember, she got a new dog named Missy.
Missy,
little
yes.
Little collie. And she tripped over the dog and apparently hurt her shoulder. It's a little fracture in her shoulder. So when y'all tune in for the State of the State, apparently she's going to be wearing a sling. But she appears to be okay. Everything's fine. But, yeah, that's a little rascal of a dog tripping up the governor there.
The first dog doing what maybe some others want to do in the next cycle, but Missy the dog. But the governor is fine. And I don't know who's going to see the State of the State. I mean, isn't it running at the same time as State of the Union?
Well, it's earlier in the evening.
Okay.
It's 6:30.
Okay.
And I think they'll have a live webcast somewhere. But you're probably not going to see it on TV because of that conflict.
There we go. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. As always, man, we appreciate the update, and we'll check back with you soon.
All right, Sean, be good.
You too. Todd Stacey, check it in. And coming up after the news break and Dr. Bill's forecast, John Sharp from AL.com joins us. Amtrak, to subsidize or not subsidize That is the vote that they tabled. And maybe they'll take up this coming week in the Mobile City Council meeting. Talk about that and Mardi Gras trees as well when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Check in with my buddy John Sharp from AL.com in just a second. This segment of the show brought to you by Stamps.com. So here's the thing. So we've been, until recently, a good old-fashioned go-get-the-stamps from the post office kind of business. Of course, that had our head of sales not doing his regular job and had him driving to the post office to get stamps. Probably not the most efficient use of his time. And in addition, postage rates have gone up again. Thankfully, though, Stamps.com eases the pain with big discounts off post office retail rates. With Stamps.com, you save 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off shipping rates. That kind of savings really adds up, especially for small businesses. Plus, Stamps.com is completely online, which saves you time. No more inconvenient trips to the post office. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. So whether you're a small office sending out invoices, an online seller shipping out products, even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it with ease. You simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 on any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. And once your mail is ready, just hand it to your mail carrier and drop it in the mailbox. It's that simple. And with Stamps.com, you get discounted postage rates you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com, a no-brainer, saving you time and money. It's no wonder over 700,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. And right now, y'all can get a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. When you do, type in the code Sean, my first name, S-E-A-N, Sean. That's Stamps.com. Just make sure to use that code, Sean. All right, checking in now with John Sharp, AL.com, and a lot to talk about. Do you want to start off talking trains or Mardi Gras trees? Which one do you want to start with?
Well, I wrote about trains this week. My colleague, Lawrence Specker, wrote about the tree, but yeah, that was kind of neat. I was walking to the council meeting on Tuesday, and I looked over, and sure enough, they were putting a tree topper on. So that was kind of neat to see that, you know, being finalized in Mobile. So it looks like, I guess the latest is that we're going to have a kind of a ceremony, a Mardi Gras style, to welcome the tree to the Mardi Gras traditions of Mobile.
Are we, any word whether, because about 2 or 3 weeks ago in the council meeting, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson talked about this most likely was the world's biggest Mardi Gras tree. Now, you sent me some pictures today on Twitter showing another big tree, but you know, we've tried this Elf of Palooza thing so many times and have failed for the most number of elves assembled anywhere. What about getting Guinness out to qualify so the city of Mobile could advertise that we have the biggest Mardi Gras tree?
Certainly we can give that a shot, I suppose. I don't know if that's even a category, but when I was casually, my wife and I were casually walking to a casino in Biloxi, we looked down and sure enough, there was a massive Mardi Gras tree at this casino. So the Palace Casino, actually.
Do you think it's bigger than Mobile's? I mean, what are you saying, John?
It was pretty close. I mean, from the from the naked eye, it looked pretty close. But I don't know. Ours is pretty big too. So let's get the Guinness folks out and start measuring. We'll see who has the largest Mardi Gras tree. And if we're not there, then well, we got to go back and see what we can do. But I guess that could be a thing.
All right, we'll see. Maybe it works out better than the Elf of Palooza thing. All right, I want to talk about trains. And you and I, how long, seriously, you and I have been talking about passenger rail service in and out of Mobile, it seems like for years, John, on this show. And you've been writing about it for a long time.
Yeah, certainly so. I mean, at least since 2015. I believe it might even gone back to 2014. I think it's the Southern Rail Commission has been talking about this at least. It could go back to 2012, 2013. So it's been quite a while. This has been a process, but you know, it all leads up to Tuesday. I mean, Tuesday, and we're not kidding around now. This is a big boat for the future of this service, whether or not Mobile decides to commit going forward with it, or if it, you know, puts on the brakes and says, you know, nah, not right now. And then, you know, it's kind of up in the air whether or not that's something that they might want to revisit down the line years from now. But, you know, it really kind of puts the whole thing in jeopardy, though, you know, from Mobile's perspective.
Is this a hard deadline? Are we really now dealing, because they tabled it to this coming meeting? Is that a hard deadline? Because sometimes I get this idea, we hear things are hard deadlines, and then they're really not.
Well, the only thing that'll change this particular deadline is if the Federal Rail Administration comes back and changes their deadline on the grant application. As far as I'm aware, nothing has changed. It's still February the 5th. So the last council meeting is on Tuesday, the day before the deadline. So we're running right up to the deadline. And I think that was the headline of my story from the other day. I mean, this vote's running right up to this grant deadline. And that's why the council is taking action right now, or being asked to take action, is to meet this particular deadline to apply their local match, or the Alabama local match, towards this particular federal grant that would finance the operation of this service for a three-year period. So it's a three-year commitment starting in the year 2023. So there would be no money expended from Mobile's budget for this service until at which time the service would be restarted. And I keep, you know, the date that keeps coming up is the year 2023. So we're still a little ways away. If the council makes this commitment, there, it doesn't mean that, you know, something else in the budget is being cut as a result. It's just at a future date, that would have to be a decision that a future council would have to make.
Wait. So if they agree to this, they can back out of it? Or, I mean, help me understand this.
Yes, they can back out of it. There's contingencies being written into this resolution that are trying to make it a little bit amenable towards some of the council members that might be more on the fence about this, about the commitment right now, meaning that if various other developments along the way with this project, meaning there's capital funds that need to be identified still on the rail line itself, somewhere along the lines of $2.2 million from the Alabama side. If those monies are not identified, the city council wants to write into this particular resolution that, hey, you know, we're not obligated to making a commitment, a future year's commitment. The hesitation from folks that are concerned, like Councilman Joel Days, about the entire project is that, you know, if we commit now, you know, that's putting it in writing, and going forward, you know, we're obligated. There's this feeling of obligation that we've already vocalized a commitment. And that once you commit into something, you start going down that road, it's harder to pull back out of it. So, you know, that's worth a discussion and debate unto itself. But there are contingencies being written into this resolution. Sure, the final version of the resolution might not even surface until Tuesday. But that's kind of where we're at right now. My understanding is that they're trying to, you know, write this thing, or it's very cautious going forward.
But we do have the other states being Mississippi and Louisiana. Are they fully in, right? Or am I understanding that correctly?
That's correct, yes. I'm not aware of, you know, any high-level or high-ranking government official in either of those two states that has come out publicly and said anything negative about this particular project. So my understanding, and they have made the financial commitments for the operations and capital needs that are going to be required on their end. The only question, my understanding is the construction or the extent of the construction of rail stations in Mississippi. I know, like in Pascagoula, there's been some hesitancy of expending too much local funds on a rail station. They decided, well, we're just going to do this concrete slab, and that's, you know, all we want to do for our particular side of things. And I believe the total amount there, which is going to be divided amongst three governmental entities, Pascagoula, their county government, and the state of Mississippi, is around $400,000. So there are still some question marks in regards to some of the rail station or rail flats in Mississippi, but everything else, though, seems to be locked in.
Hey, for people that have not been reading your work on this over time, I guess we kind of breezed over one part of it, that this is there's federal money. This is one of these things, like so many deals we talk about, there's federal grant money, and then some combination of local government has to come up with a match, right?
That's correct, yes. The big I guess from the Southern Rail Commission's perspective, the big victory was last summer when the what they called a Chrissy grant was awarded. It was something around the lines of $33 million, and that was for capital needs to improve the rail line in order for this train to be restarted. That's in federal money. But like all grants, or almost most grants of this nature, you have to have a local match of some sort. In Mississippi and Louisiana, what we've seen is some state commitments coming, and we have not seen that in Alabama. There has been concerns from the governor's office, and they have been also equally expressed by the Alabama State Port Authority that there is a concern about passenger rail interfering with the activity at the state docks, and particular the freight trains that come through there that are key to the economic interest of the port of Mobile.
Well, I mean, this is completely anecdotal, although I did document it with some photographs. I was going down to do a sound check yesterday for this upcoming AL1 Democrat debate that Robert Kennedy Jr. is hosting along with Peter Albrecht, that you can hear here at FM Talk 106.5 and see on WKRG. And I stood there underneath the overpass for about 25 minutes as two trains sat there blocking. They had blocked Gulf Quest to get in. And I mean, they were just sitting there, two freight trains. I mean, they were not going anywhere, just kind of idling. So, I mean,
I think most people that have been downtown before have tried to access Cooper Riverside Park or have been to the convention center, probably, you know, or have waited to park in the convention center, probably can relay similar stories. That's nothing unusual.
So, I mean, yeah. So we already have a situation where you have, I mean, you have these freight trains down there already stopping traffic, right? I mean, and if you had a passenger train, it's going to come through there, and I don't know if it comes through right there or where the passenger train would come through exactly, but that would delay you to getting back to New Orleans or wherever you were going on your trip.
Well, you're correct by that, but to address that particular concern, there has been talks about moving the train station or the rail flat, or whatever you want to call it, the platform, to Brooklyn, so it wouldn't even come downtown. And that seems to be more favorable to Mr. Lyons with the State Port Authority. But, you know, there are also concerns on whether or not, freight rail and Amtrak could, there could be some interference with passenger rail anywhere along that line between Mobile and New Orleans. And so that's being expressed right now during these conversations. And there is a freight rail study that's going on. It's supposed to take about 6 months, and that'll determine whether or not there would be delays anywhere along any choke points, I suppose.
Right, because that would exist. Because that would exist exactly right. If it doesn't come to Mobile, you could still have that interference between Pascagoula and New Orleans.
That's correct, yes.
All right, can you hold on during the news break?
Yeah.
All right, coming right back. More with John Sharp, AL.com.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good to talk to my buddy John Sharp with AL.com and talking trains like you and I have so many times in the past. So the situation is that coming up this deadline, it's a real deadline for this vote coming up on Tuesday for the council, right?
That's correct, yes, unless something changes at the last minute with the Federal Railroad Administration's grant deadline. They pushed it back a month last month, but I haven't gotten any indication that they plan on doing that again.
Explain something to me. I'm trying to figure out, because I saw a little bit of it, and actually, by the way, Mobile City Council audio was way better this week. I don't know what happened, but way better. But it's a whole other discussion. What about Disneyland, Disney World? What was Councilman Richardson saying about that?
It actually came up during the pre-conference meeting. It was a brief comment that he made, basically like, you know, we're going to do the same thing to Amtrak that we did to Walt Disney. We told Walt Disney, and I'm paraphrasing what Councilman Richardson said, but he said basically we told Walt Disney to get lost. And we don't want him here, we don't need him or whatever, and we're going to do the same thing with Amtrak. And immediately, and I'm not the only reporter that was there, he was like, okay, Google, what's going on here? You know, it's kind of like doing this search on, you know, is this a thing? And I've heard that rumor before that, yeah, you know, Walt Disney came to Mobile or somewhere in South Alabama.
He wouldn't be in South Mobile County, I heard.
Right.
I don't think that's I never heard any proof of that.
Well, I got a story because of what Councilman Richardson said, because it just seems fascinating, and it's something that's been talked about. I don't think we've ever really ran a story on this before in the past. So I decided, well, you know, I'll reach out to some Disney experts. And so I'll be having a story up on AL.com here in the next day or two that kind of debunks some of the things that Councilman Richardson suggested. There is really no truth that Walt Disney was looking at Alabama, anywhere in Alabama, for Disney World. It wasn't because of racial strife in the 1960s, or because the mayor of Mobile told him to get lost, or anything along those lines. It just is simply put that, you know, the preferred site was Central Florida. Now, there were a few other cities that he considered, a few other locations, St. Louis being one of them, briefly. He also looked at Niagara Falls, but ultimately Florida was the spot. And so I go into that a little bit. It's kind of a fun little thing to look at.
You're going to ruin so much bar talk that I've heard over the years when it come up and people say, what you don't know, Sean, is Walt Disney wanted to be in Mobile County. I mean, that I'm glad you're doing this story, because that has been said so many times over the years. People are like, what you don't understand, Sean. I mean, I've had people call the show and tell me about it. So good that you're doing this. Finally, it's a story. Somebody's doing this.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting. It's something I had heard years ago when I first got here, and I'm like, you know, it just seems like one of those classic urban legends, you know, or something along those lines that passes through the generations, you know. And, you know, one of those things where, well, my grandfather or great-grandfather picked up Walt at the airport and showed him around town and that sort of thing. And, you know, I did reach out to a couple of historians. Actually, one of the historians is an Alabama a resident, a Disney he wrote a book on Disney World, and he's the CEO of Downtown Huntsville, Inc. And so I talked to Chad Emerson as part of this story as well. Just interesting. You know, it just is one of those things that I credit Councilman Richardson for jumping into that and raising a lot of eyebrows, including my own. And I thought, well, that might make an interesting story, and I bet there'll be, you know, some readership or something like that.
You're kidding me. It's going to be the most clicked and leaf through story of the week, for sure, if not of the month, John. You know that. You know that.
Well, you never know. You never know. Some of these things.
You're good at this.
Take a life on their own sometimes.
Yeah, you're good at this. As always, man, I appreciate your time on this, and we'll be talking again after that meeting coming up on Tuesday.
Sounds good, Sean.
All right, John Sharp checking in from AL.com. We're coming right back, hour number two. Hey, my next guest, I'll get, you know, county perspective on this too, as we talk about trains, Mobile County Commissioner and candidate for AL1 in the Republican primary, Jerry Carl, joins us next. Y'all stay close.